Papers Company 3Q20 Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to our first speaker today, Mr. Hassier. Please take over, sir.
Welcome to GlobalWafers' third quarter 2020 earnings conference call. This is Hassier, semiconductor analyst for Credit Suisse, and your host for the call with management today. I am pleased to be joined by Doris Hsu, the chairperson and CEO, and William Chen, vice president and spokesperson for GlobalWafers. During the call, we will start with an executive summary by Doris and followed by the review of third quarter financial results by William. We will then open the call for Q&A sessions with Doris and William. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Also know that the company will have a replay on its website after the conference. And now I am pleased to turn the call to Doris and William. Please go ahead with your summary on the results and outlook.
Okay, thank you, Hass. Hello everyone, welcome to join GlobalWafers Q320 earnings call. I'm Warren Chen, GlobalWafers Vice President and company spokesman. We also have Doris Hsu, chairperson and the CEO of GlobalWafers in this call. Doris will give us the executive comments first, and then I will present industry overview, Q320 performance update, and the company ESG highlights. The final Q&A session will be hosted by Doris as usual. For today's presentation file, as always, we had uploaded onto our company's website around 2 hours ago. If you do not have the file on hand, please access into our website to get the most updated file. Please note that some information during our discussion today will consist of forward-looking statements, which are applied throughout the call and the presentation. These are subject to significant risk and uncertainties. Actual result of or trend could differ materially from our forecast. Please refer to the safe harbor notice in our presentation page 2 disclaimer. Now I'd like to hand over the call to Doris for the page 3 executive comments. Doris, please.
Thank you, William. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks a lot for joining GlobalWafers 2020 Q3 earnings conference. Different from most of the industries, I think semiconductor market remains relatively resistant to global macroeconomic headwinds this year. Same as the previous two quarters, GlobalWafers had QOQ improvement in both revenue and shipment quantity in Q3 again. Despite of the criticality of pandemic and adverse foreign exchange impact, fortunately, we managed to keep our EBITDA at 40% in Q3, which is 1.9% higher than last year. And also, we managed to be able to keep very stable operating profit percent and net profit percent as well. Both of our operating profit percent and net income percent are the second best in GlobalWafers record. In summary, I think GlobalWafers overall Q3 overall financial performance is good. Later on, William will share more details. Now, I would like to update some overall operation status. First of all, let me update our overall utilization status of each product line. The first line I would like to update is 300 millimeter epi and polished wafers. The utilization rate for both 300 millimeter epi and polished wafer are both very high, especially for epi, 300 millimeter epi is extremely tight right now. We started ramping up our new fab, 300 millimeter new fab in Korea from Q3. Due to some installation delays caused by COVID-19, this new fab in Korea, new fab capacity is not 100% ready for mass production yet. It keeps increasing quarter by quarter, but we haven't reached 100% yet. Some tools are still under final installation stage or fine-tuning stage right now. Some are under customers' final qualification stage, and the shipment quantity of our new fab in Korea will keep increasing quarter by quarter in the next several quarters. And the second line I would like to update for the utilization status is our 200 millimeter wafer. 200 millimeter wafer, the demand for 200 millimeter wafer is not as strong as 300 millimeter epi, but it's still very good as well. Matter of fact, the demand is improving rapidly from the last couple months for 200 millimeter. We see very good recovery from quite a lot of automotive customers as well. And many of those automotive parts are for 200 millimeter. So our overall 200 millimeter wafer utilization rate is very high, getting much higher as well. It's not like 300 millimeter epi, that kind of capacity is overloaded, but it's very close to 100% as well, our 200 millimeter wafers. And the third item I would like to update is SOI, our 200 millimeter SOI. 200 millimeter SOI was a little bit weak in the past 2 weeks, 2 quarters. But starting from Q4, we see a very good improvement on the loading of our 200 millimeter SOI as well. The weakest one in the past several quarters was small diameters, which means that 6-inch or below 6-inch. Fortunately, it's improving now as well. Again, for small diameter, quite a lot of recovery is from automotive parts. We are happy that we see much better visibility and also much stronger demand for almost all production lines right now. In addition to utilization status, I would like to update a little bit about our cash flow status as well. GlobalWafers cash flow from operations is still very healthy, very strong. Our accumulated cash flow from operations in the past 3 quarters, from January to end of September this year, is around $320 million. That's from operation in the past 9 months. And as of end of Q3, our cash and the equivalents amounted $1.1 billion. That's our current cash position. So you see that we still have very healthy, very strong cash. Despite all of the headwinds, our EPS of the first 3 quarters of this year is still doing okay, and it has already reached 22.21 per normal share. And this is also a very good year for GlobalWafers as well. Our performance in the past 3 quarters were okay. And how about Q4 and 2021? Here is our view. I think the first view I would like to share with everyone is that we think that same as the past 3 quarters, we think we will have QOQ revenue growth in Q4 as well. And we are positive for the demand and visibility for Q4, but at the same time, we are seeing some major headwinds and uncertainties in not only Q4, but also maybe the coming several quarters as below. The first headwinds and uncertainty is, of course, COVID-19. Early this year, we were hoping that the COVID-19, the whole pandemic, would be able to be well contained by end of the year. But looks like that the situation is worse than what we expect, what we estimate early this year. So COVID-19 is definitely the number one uncertainty from our viewpoint, and also one of the most critical headwinds from our viewpoint. And COVID-19, how bad the COVID-19 will affect worldwide macroeconomics, this is an uncertainty, very hard for us to predict. This is the first uncertainty and headwinds for us. And the second critical headwinds and uncertainty for us is foreign exchange volatility. It's much more difficult than ever to manage or to hedge our foreign exchange. So far, most of our revenue income is in US dollar. More than 50% of our revenue income is in US dollar. But most of our costs and expenses are in non-US dollar. So this is one of the reasons, this FX impact is one of the reasons of our weak gross margin in Q3, slightly weaker than last quarter, is FX. So volatile FX, this is our second uncertainty and our headwind we're experiencing for now. And the third important uncertainty for us now is the development of the trade tension in some area. This is also one of a very important uncertainties for us as well. So these three are the major concerns we have for now. It's not only for Q4, but also maybe for 2021 as well. So COVID-19, foreign exchange volatility, and also the trade tension, these three are what we concern a lot. Okay, so those are the headwinds. And overall, from business visibility's viewpoint, early this year, we had more concern about BCP supply chain stability, availability of the supply chain. But now it seems that we are seeing much better order visibility right now. The visibility is improving, including the weakest industry, automotive, early this year. We see that starting from September, we see more and more improvement of automotive industry as well. So we think that the whole semiconductor overall industry visibility is improving, including automotive business. So in summary, we think that the semiconductor industry will keep improving next year, and GlobalWafers revenue will keep growing next year as well. This is our view. So in the next several quarters, our product focus is advanced silicon wafer, 300 millimeter SOI, silicon carbide gallium nitride compound products. These are still our key focus products in the next several quarters. And administration-wise, our key focus in Q4 and 2021 will be our supply chain risk management and BCP because of all the uncertainties. So we are making more effort than before to control our overall supply chain risk management, also our BCP. The last but not the least is ESG. Our key focus in 2021 for ESG is to increase the weight of renewable energies in our total power consumption to keep cutting down our CO2 emission. That's our key focus in 2022. So we will provide more data of these items in our next earnings call. Thank you again for joining us today. We are very happy to show you our Q3 result. William will present further details of our Q3 shortly. Thank you very much. William, please.
Thank you, Doris. Now, let me share some pages of industry overview. Please turn to page 7. Latest, the world economy outlook. In October, IMF estimates the global economy will contract by 4.4% this year, a slight better than its June prediction, which was -4.9%. And the growth in 2021 is projected to rebound to 5.2%. However, from recent second wave pandemic spreading, the recovery is not assured now. Page 8. Global silicon wafer area shipment. According to October research report, Global silicon wafer shipments are set to increase 2.4% YOY in 2020, with continued growth in 2021 and reaching a record high shipment in 2022 again. Page 9. COVID-19 drives rise in global fab equipment spending. From third quarter World Fab Forecast Report, there is an 8% increase in global fab equipment spending in 2020 and a 13% increase in 2021 to meet the newest application increasing demands, plus safety stock preparation for COVID-19 and the US-China trade tension. Page 10. 5G subscription worldwide forecast. 5G subscriptions are forecast to increase worldwide from 2019 to 2025, exceed 2.7 billion subscriptions at 197% CAGR by 2025. Page 11. Public cloud computing service market forecast. The worldwide public cloud services market is forecast to grow 6.3% in 2020 to total $257.9 billion and exceed $364 billion by 2022, representing 16.4% CAGR from 2018 to 2022. Page 12. Automatic IC with the strongest CAGR grew throughout 2024. As a research report, the automotive IC market share is forecast to register the strongest 2019 to 2024 CAGR at 9.7%. Next, from page 13 to 18, are addressing on the compound materials, silicon carbide and the gallium nitride. Page 13, roadmap for SiC power device. The advantages of SiC devices on high breakdown field and thermal conductivity drive many applications such as EV, HEV, charging infrastructure, and high power applications are expected to grow quickly in the near future. Page 14, prospering SiC driven by automotive application. In SiC power market, the automotive segment is the foremost driver, will hold more than 50% of total devices market shares in 2025. Page 15, SiC, revolutionizing the electrical vehicles. Comparing to silicon wafers, four SiC advantages in electrical vehicles. The first, smaller battery. The second, reduced weight. The third, fast charging. The fourth, increased range. Page 16, SiC positioning within an EV, HEV. SiC's primary automotive applications are onboard EV chargers, DC-AC converters, and powertrain inverters. Page 17, SiC adoption in automotive companies. SiC devices have been widely used in many brand-name automotive companies, such as Tesla, Renault, ZF, Bosch, Continental, and so on. Page 18, power gallium nitride devices market forecast. Power gallium nitride devices market growth will be in the range of 167% YOY in 2019, mainly driven by consumer fast charger applications, estimated to grow into $700 million market value in 2025. However, due to the COVID-19 outbreak, smartphone production is estimated to drop 20% in 2020. Next, let's move to page 20, Q3 20 performance update. Page 20, Q3 20 financial highlights. About Q3 20 financial performance, A storage highlight right now, semiconductor market has remained largely resistant to global macroeconomic headwinds. However, GlobalWafers still reached Q3 20 sequential improvement in revenue and the shipment. The QoQ revenue grows 2.2%. And good profit despite of COVID-19. The EBITDA percentage 40%, with YoY growth 1.9%. Net profit percentage 24.2%, with YoY 0.9% increase. EPS 7.78 NT dollars, which is YoY increasing 0.14 NT dollars. Accumulated 3Q20, EBITDA reached the second best in company history. Operating profits percentage and net profit percentage also achieved the second best as well. Financial leverage. Company with a sufficient cash position, 32.7 billion NT dollars. Also with prepayment, 17.5 billion NT dollars. Page 21. QoQ financial highlight. Q3 20 versus Q2 20. In this QoQ comparison table, as stated earlier, company reached a 2.2% revenue growth in Q3 20. However, caused by unfavorable exchange rate, strong NT dollars versus US dollars, and increasing depreciation in Korea new plant ramping up operations in Q3, some QoQ financial figures were slightly declined. EBITDA minus 0.1%, operating profits minus 3.6%, net profit minus 0.3%, EPS minus 0.3 NT dollars, ROE minus 0.4%, but for ROA with plus 0.5%. Page 22, YoY financial highlight, Q3 20 versus Q3 19. For YoY comparison, given the COVID-19 continuously impacting this year, Q3 20 revenue was just 2.1% lower than Q3 19. However, when converting into US dollars revenue, the Q3 20 revenue is 4.1% higher than Q3 19. Even so, GlobalWafers still reached the better YoY EBITDA 2.7%, net profit plus 1.8%, and EPS plus 0.14 NT dollars. Page 23, financial highlights, accumulate 3Q 20 versus 3Q 19. For the accumulated first three-quarter comparison, same as last page YoY comparison. Because COVID-19 impacting in 2020, the accumulated 3Q 20 financial result was still softer than 3Q 19. Page 24, revenue and gross margin. As described in page 21, company achieved the better QoQ revenue plus 2.2%, yet with slightly gross margin percentage dropping from 38.6% in Q2 to 37.2% in Q3. The main reasons for this gross margin decreasing were, first, exchange rate, strong NT dollars versus US dollars. The second, depreciation. Korea new plant ramping up operations with depreciation counting from this Q3, yet not fully loaded the capacity. Page 25, EBITDA and EPS. For EBITDA, the accumulated 3Q20 EBITDA to revenue percentage continuously improved to 39.4%. which was better than 39% in 2019. Accumulated 3Q20 2020 EPS was maintained high profit level as of $22.21. Page 26, financial leverage. By Q3 20, GlobalWafers continues to cap the sufficient cash as high as $32.7 billion on hand. That shows the company has very healthy financial status. LTA prepayment amount was $17.5 billion, which was around $1 billion decreasing in Q3. That was also similar amount decreasing trend as Q2. The bank loan increase was owing to high dividend distributed in Q3 20. Page 27, income statement. In this income statement, just recap. Given some financial figures in accumulated 3Q20 were slightly lower than 2019. Yet very positively, there is improving QOQ market trend in 2020. That is much better than 2019, the QOQ dropping market trend. Page 28, balance sheet. In this balance sheet, just highlight. The short-term loan increased to $3 billion because dividend distribution in Q3. The inventory slightly increased to $7.4 billion. Still well managed. Mainly for macro uncertainty, Q4 factory annual maintenance, and the Taiwan new EpiFab expansion material preparations. Next, page 30 to 36 for ESG highlights. Page 30, sustainable environment electricity. GlobalWafers optimized group-wide electricity consumption has improved operating profit by 14.8% in 3 years. Page 31, improvement on electricity consumption. GlobalWafers dedicates in enhancing energy efficiency and achieve the same revenue with less energy. That is 24% improving from 2017 to 2019. Page 32, committed to green energy. To fulfill a commitment to sustainable development, GlobalWafers cooperates with its parent company, SAS, on solar installation of 3.5 megawatts, which could reduce 1,842 tons of CO2 emission every year. Page 33, sustainable environment waste. GlobalWafers adopt circular economy solution to reuse and regenerate almost 80% of waste as ingredients by other industries. We are awarded the High Distinction Award from year 2020, Outstanding Enterprise for Waste Reduction and Circular Economy. Page 34, Charity and the Environmental Protection. GlobalWafers devote our love to the ones left in need via donations. We also extend our care to environment throughout corporate volunteers by a series of activities like fish cleanings. Page 35, ethical business practice. GlobalWafers is continuously taking solid actions in legal compliance, code of ethical conduct, grievance system, and risk assessments. Page 36, diversity and inclusion. GlobalWafers is committed to supporting gender equity, advancing women in the workplace globally. Women in our global workforce is 24% overall, 14% on our board. Above is my presentation, thank you. Next, I would like to hand over to Doris for the Q&A session. Doris, please.
Yeah, thank you, William.
Thank you, Doris and William. While we are waiting for the questions from the audience, I can start with two questions. The first question I would like to ask is on your expectation for the role for outlook in 2021. You mentioned in your presentation that the global silicon wafer shipment will only reach record high in 2022. Would that mean the raw wafer industry will still be in a bit of the oversupply in 2021 before turning into balance or timing in 2022?
No, I would say that 2021, the wafer supply demand will be very, very close. So it will be very healthy. 2021, overall, based on our current investigation and market study, we think that the overall wafer shipment volume will be somewhere around 4-5% higher than this year. And, or 2021 total wafer shipment volume, square inch wise, will be very close to 2018. So if you see our page 8, our forecast 2021 square inch, million square inch, will be around 12.5 billion million square inch. And 2018 is very close. And you know that 2018 was the one of the very best year, the super cycle year for the industry. And in the past several years, yes, there were some expansion. So total capacity will be slightly higher than 2018, but still, I think 2021 will be the supply demand will be very balanced. That's our view for 2021.
Okay, and a quick follow-up to my first question is on your view on the long-term agreement negotiation and also pricing outlook, given the near-term foundry supply tightness. Thank you.
Yeah. In the past several years, long-term agreement was one of a very important business strategy for GWC. But the market is changing a little bit, especially for now due to a lot of uncertainties and foreign exchange rate issue. Now customers are not that aggressive to give us any firm commitment for next 3-5 years with fixed price and a significant prepayment for now. So we do have some LTAs extension or new LTAs under discussion, but we didn't finalize any new LTAs in the last 2-3 quarters. We think that maybe starting from the second half of 2021, it's very likely that maybe we will have new LTA closed in the second half of 2021, but not Q4 this year, maybe not Q1 next year. Some are under discussion, but the uncertainties, a lot of uncertainties, that definitely is not helpful at all for the LTA finalizing LTA. And also, from our viewpoint, from GWC as a supplier's viewpoint, if we have to commit a fixed price for the next 3-4 years, it's a little risky. I mean, I'm not talking about that the price itself, but I'm talking about currency. Because if you have to fix the price in US dollar for the next several years, or you have to fix the price in euro for the next several years, I think I'm more concerned than 2-3 years ago now. So because of the uncertainty. So that's why neither Stellar, I mean Global Wafers, nor the customers, neither side is really very aggressive to finalize any new LTA for now. But that's still we believe that's still a very good strategy to really, especially if you need to trigger any new expansion, I think LTA is a must-have factor from our viewpoint. Thank you, Haas.
That's very helpful. My second question is regarding your Korea fab plan. With the fab ramping slower than expected, could you provide update on the capacity installation plan for that fab? And will most of the capacity be supplying to your memory customers in Korea? And also, your tax rate is lower in 3Q. Is it related to the tax incentive from the Korean government? And what should we think about the tax rate in the future? Thank you.
First of all, our Korean capacity is, you're right, is majority of the capacity is for memory. And our total capacity is still same as the plan, which is 176,000 wafers a month, no change. The installation, matter of fact, tours moving were on schedule, but the problem which caused the delay was from the installation and final fine-tuning. And it's mainly because of the inconvenience of the overseas travel, the quarantine thing. So we use a lot of video conference with foreign engineers to check the status of our tool installation. So that caused the delay. But in general, it's just about 2-3 months delay. So we are ramping up now. I think by end of the year, our Korea fab will have high output, very close to around 80% of our total designed capacity. That's our view. And the tax incentive for our Korean fab, I think so far we haven't enjoyed any tax incentive from the new fab there. The reason that in Q3 it seems that our tax expense, tax corp income tax amount is slightly lower. It has nothing to do with Korea. It was a part of the reason is because that we approved our Japan operation. GWJ just approved to not to pay the dividend for their 2015 earnings. That's the main reason. And you know that in Taiwan, whenever we overseas fab has any earnings in every year, we have to reserve the corp income tax in Taiwan as well. But the board approved that no return in for GWJ earnings in 2015. So of course, the tax expenses we reserved for 2015's earnings have to be returned, and that was one of the reason of the looks like that the tax expenses is lower in Q3. So that's the main reason. And also, I think the gross margin, our Q3 gross margin is around 1% lower than Q2. Main reason is because the more tours we started the depreciation, especially from Korean fab. You know that even we haven't 100% finished the installation of the tours yet, but our policy is that whenever the tours, any individual tours is approved or is buy off, we qualify the tours, then no matter if the other tours are ready or not, we have to start the depreciation. That's our accounting policy. So we apply our accounting discipline, accounting policy for Korean fab as well. So that was why our depreciation jumped a lot in Q3 from Korean new fab. I hope my explanation is clear. Thank you, Haas.
Thank you, Doris and William. Just a reminder that the call will be finished at 6 p.m. So only two questions are allowed for each participant. William, please proceed for the Q&A session. Thank you.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, it is star followed by one if you wish to ask a question. We have the first question coming from the line of Sunny Lin from UBS. Go ahead.
Hi, Doris Bolam. Thank you for taking my question. And thank you for spending time with us today. My first question is a bit longer term, but I wonder if we could have your high-level perspective on the industry outlook. So if we think about the potentially better supply demand into the next 2 years, how would you compare that with the upcycle in 2017 and 2018? What do you think could be some of the positives and what's the negatives? That's my first question.
Thank you, Sunny. That's a very important question we keep asking ourselves and the managing team every month. We think that the next, I think at least for 2021 and 2022, the supply will be not as tight as 2017 and 2018. Demand will be stronger than that time, but the shortage, the capacity shortfall is not as critical as 2-3 years ago. And main reason was that the past, before 2016, actually more than 5 years, no expansion at all for silicon wafer. Last expansion was 2010. Last sizable expansion was 2010. And then almost all silicon wafer companies making a lot of losses, so almost no significant expansion at all in the past 5 years. So suddenly when the market, when the demand improved, and suddenly because of Moore's law and a lot of the difficulty of the downsizing of the chip size in 2016, 17, and getting more and more expensive. So the wafer by area, wafer demand is getting higher and higher, and suddenly people find that there's no available capacity, especially for 12-inch. So that was why the past 2 years, 2017, 19, and the first half of 2017, 18, and the first half of 2019. So total, 30 months, those 30 months were the demand, the supply was very tight. But starting from 2022, the situation will be a little bit different. Main difference is that the past several years, silicon wafer companies did have some expansion. Some had bigger expansion, some had a smaller one, but almost every silicon wafer fabs had some expansion in the past several years. And another difference is that before 2016, there was no China newcomer, but now it's very different. Several newcomers in China, they are working hard, although they are not really ready yet, but they will be there. The capacity for mature parts, some China material maybe will be good enough to support some mature products. So that's why we think that 2022 supply demand will be extremely tight again. But the product mix will be different because the most critical shortage will be coming from advanced node. And those are the really super tight one. And that was why I explained that our 300 millimeter epi for most advanced parts, the supply is really very tight for now. So I think that'll be the main difference. But in general, I think 2022-23, these 2 years, the whole silicon wafer market will be very, very tight again.
Right, thank you very much. That's very helpful. My second question is regarding your expansion plan. So I think your new fab in Korea may be sort of considered as a type of brownfield expansion, as it actually shares the facility with the existing fab. So I wonder, beyond this Korean fab, can you do similar expansion at any of the existing plants? The overall cost could be more competitive and reasonable, and therefore, the lead time could also be shorter.
Yeah, thank you, Sunny. Korean fab is definitely a brownfield. We share some common facilities together, and the capacity is 100% taken. Our Korean new fab capacity 100% taken under a very strong LTA. So that capacity has already been taken. And what about other capacity? Yeah, we do have some small scale expansion here and there. For example, in Taiwan, Taicell, we have new capacity, new expansion for epi reactor that's in Taicell campus, but we expand the clean room and add several more epi reactor. The capacity will be available in early 2022. And we will have some further expansion for maybe for 300 millimeter SOI in our campus in St. Peter's. And that's pretty much what we have for now. Of course, we are open for any expansion if any of our strategic customers are willing to make commitment. Then we are always open to build capacity together with our customers. That's our strategy. If no firm commitment from customers, then our strategy is capability first instead of capacity first. That means that it's very likely that we will, for example, we will install most advanced tools, production tools or inspection tools to replace existing tools which maybe have already been used for 10 years, 12 years. those were still in very good condition, but not good enough throughput-wise or quality-wise, not good enough. So our strategy, our CapEx for the next several years will be focused on capability up instead of capacity up. That's our strategy. And when we're talking about capability, I didn't mean that 100% for from 7 nano to 5 nano, that kind of capability. That's, of course, a very important one. But I mean that another capability means that, for example, quite a lot of power devices, which used to be used very difficult, very tough products, but used to be in 200 millimeter, but we know that many of our customers, maybe they will migrate to 300. We will support our customer to migrate. That for us, that is so-called capability up as well. Also, with new automation and new tools, if we can improve our productivity, our throughput, we will consider this as capability up as well. So in a nutshell, I think in general, our view, our strategy is that in the next several years, we're not going to build a new fab from greenfield, build a new fab. That's not our policy. But it's very likely that we will, in our campus, maybe we will replace a big portion of our tools, use the brand new, most advanced state-of-the-art tools to replace our old tools. By doing so, to improve our productivity, cost, and also our capability. That's our strategy, Sunny.
Sure. Just a very quick follow-up, if I may. So, for a new extension, what's the current lead time for brownfield and greenfield extension? And are you seeing any very initial customer engagement for the future extension at this point?
Lead time wise, if we are talking about a brownfield, I think it will take at least 18 months. 18 months, that's a very efficient project, about 18 months lead time. If you are talking about a greenfield, I think it will be another 6 to 12 months longer than brownfield. That's our view. And so far, several customers are talking with us, but so far none of them have already very close to the final stage yet. So at this point of time, GWC doesn't have any plan to make any brownfield or greenfield expansion. We have no plan to make any new brownfield or greenfield expansion for now. We will do more existing fabs renovation and upgrade. That's what we're going to do for now.
Thank you. So we have the next question. You come from the line of Thurston Yu from Goldman Sachs. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi, management. Hi, Doris. Hi, William. Thanks for taking my question. Hi. Thanks for hosting the call. I'll keep to my question short. First of all, could you help me quantify the margin impact in 2021 from the Korean fab depreciation? Is it something like 1-2%, this kind of range, or is there anywhere we can quantify that?
It's very hard to quantify for now. We have several improvement action items working on. So our goal is to keep the gross margin percentage not so big different, but we will increase the gross margin amount. That's our strategy. So I think even there's some impact, I think it's very hard to quantify, but it should be minor from our viewpoint. Of course, as I explained earlier, there are quite a lot of uncertainty, including Korean won, US dollar, a lot of factors. Those are challenging from our viewpoint.
Got it. Thank you very much. And then just to follow up on one of Hans's earlier questions, could you just comment on a little more about the inventory levels that you're seeing on the supply chain for the raw silicon wafer? I know that last analyst meeting you mentioned that it looks quite manageable, even though it looks slightly higher. I just want to get an update on that.
Okay. Yes, inventory is something we are very cautious as well. Usually our inventory level, the whole group consolidated inventory level is always around 7 billion NT. And this year, this quarter, end of Q3, it increased a little bit, it's to 7.3 billion NT, slightly higher. And the reason for a little bit higher inventory was because that we feel that COVID-19 is not really contained yet. So we intentionally increased some raw material inventory. And also another reason for this is that we see better visibility of our order demand. So we don't want to lose any of our capacity, keep any capacity idle. So as long as we have firm orders, even the lead time, the customer delivery time is Q4 or even early Q1, we will produce as long as that we have idle capacity. So these two factors are the reason why our inventory went up a little bit at the end of Q3. And if we're talking about our supply chain, our suppliers' current status, I think so far COVID-19 is getting tough right now, and we see more countries locking down again. So it looks like a little bit challenging, but we feel that operation-wise should be okay, but the transportation lead time maybe will get longer. So our strategy is to double the transportation time. Increase our inventory, raw material inventory, by doubling the exportation time as the target. So for example, some shipment by vessel, if usually it takes 2 weeks, then we will count that maybe we'll need 4 weeks for now. For example, our shipment to customers to Germany and to France now, because of 1 month lockdown, we're still checking that how much that affect our transportation by the time. So let me make it a quick summary here. For supply chain, I think we don't see much about operation disruption, operation trouble. I mean, our suppliers, operation issue, manufacturing issue, but we see more risk on delivery lead time, lengthy lead time, that may be prolonged transportation lead time. That is our concern. So we will intentionally increase our raw material inventory by somewhere around 2 weeks. That's our strategy. And finished good wise, as long as that we have enough some idle capacity, then we will build our finished good inventory a little bit higher, so somewhere around 1 week to 2 weeks, a little bit higher, just in case that we need to ship the goods to our customer earlier due to the transportation longer transportation lead time. So that's our view. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question. It comes from the line of Roland Chu from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. First question is for the gross margin. Can you comment that the gross margin impact from this exchange rate of volatility? So in 3Q, we have this anti-dollar appreciation. And so how did that impact to your overall gross margin in 3Q? Thanks.
Yeah. Our gross margin this month, this quarter, Q3 versus Q2, gross margin dropped around 1.2%. There were three main reasons for the weaker gross margin. Number one is, of course, product mix is a little bit different than previous month and the previous quarter. The second one is Korean depreciation starts, so that's the second issue. The third reason is foreign exchange, especially super weak US dollar and super strong NT dollar. So these three factors are the main reasons of the weak gross margin in Q3. And if we want to quantify these three factors, I think the most critical one is foreign exchange rate. This one accounts for somewhere around 0.6 to 0.7% of our gross margin down, and the other two accounts for another 45% of the gross margin impact.
Okay, thank you. This is helpful. And how about 4Q gross margin? You know, because now $70 is still strong, and also you still have this increasing depreciation from Korea new fab. So yeah. How should you look at the 4Q gross margin?
I think 4Q, if FX is stable, I think 4Q should be same as Q3 or a little bit better than Q3, because we expect that Q4 revenue will grow again QOQ. So our view is that Q4 is gross margin, because Q4 depreciation should be very close to Q3, slightly higher than Q3, but not that big different. So gross margin should be close, but our concern now, we have two concerns for Q4 gross margin. One is freight. You remember that in Q2 we suffered badly from extremely expensive freight. And now several countries locked down again, so far we are still investigating that how much that will hurt the freight. So that is one issue. And the second issue is that it seems that euro become very weak as well. It's getting weak now. So that's another impact. So and that was from October. In Q3, there was no impact from euro yet. But now it went down from 1.9 down to 1.19 down to 1.16. And we don't know that if it will be stabilized or will be keep going down. We don't know yet, but the Korean won, Japanese yen, and NT dollars are still high, and you know we have big fabs in Korea, Japan, and Taiwan, so we monitor the FX impact very closely. So far, it's very hard for us to predict that, to project our Q4 forecast. It has nothing to do with product mix, because we have 100% firm orders for now, nothing to do with the product mix, nothing to do with the depreciation, because we know the depreciation, we know our revenue, but we don't really know how expensive the transportation freight will be, and we don't know how bad the foreign exchange currency will be. So those are our the reason why we cannot give you a better projection for now. Thank you very much for your question. I hope that my answer is clear enough for your reference.
Thank you, sir. Should I take the next question?
I think we can take the last question.
All right. This question comes from Sebastian Holt from CLSA4.
Thanks for squeezing me in. I have two questions. First one is on the pricing outlook. I'm not sure, because it's down later, so I'm not sure if a chair lady has talked about this with your prepared remarks. But if you haven't, can you share some light about the pricing for both spot and LTA in this quarter and also in 2021? Thank you.
Thanks for your question. Pricing, this is very sensitive, and I think that in general, if we are talking about same product, the price for same product in 2020 versus 2021, then I can tell you that the price, most of the price will go up. And main reason is, there are two main reasons for the price improvement. One is that the demand, the supply capacity is tighter than this year. And the second one is because of currency. When we suffer a lot of currency, foreign exchange currency in 2020. So of course, if the quotation, if the revenue is in weak currency, then next year we definitely will discuss with customer either convert to some other currency or share the FX loss together with our customer. So for these two reasons, we believe that 2021's ASP should be a little bit better than this year. That's our view. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And my second question, also related to the first one, is the proportion between the LTA and the spot, your 12-inch and 8-inch wafer into 2021, and how does that compare with this year?
Yeah, I think LTA percentage definitely will be going down year by year, that's for sure. Before we sign any new LTAs, of course, the existing LTA is coming down. Percentage-wise, it's weaker and weaker. That's the direction. But it's not really very drastic. I mean, the percentage, it's not, especially in 2021, I think it's still quite close to 2020. LTA coverage wise, it's lower, but not big reduction in 2021.
Okay, so yes. If that's the case, then I think the chair lady, your comments on the pricing go up next year, while the LTA proportion is similar or going down a little bit into next year, then does that imply that the spot price will go up next year?
Yes, the spot price definitely will go up. That's our view. Especially, I mean, for 300 milliliters, spot price versus spot price it will go up next year. That's our view.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your questions. Thank you, everyone.
This is the current conference, and we thank Doris and Grant for the call today. The replay will be available on the company's website later. Thank you and have a nice day. Goodbye.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Have a nice day.